All the second stage tanks now pressurized. 35 seconds and counting. We are still going.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lindin.
Are we beginning to see the formation of a fundamental shift in the American dream of home ownership?
A weekly mortgage market update.
20 seconds and counting.
Fighting up-to-the-minute information.
The of Chinese investors in the real estate market, and they're really starting to have an impact, but it's only
on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry.
15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
If you look at it on a dollar value, it's significant. If you look at it on a unit basis, it's inconsequential to the overall big market.
To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972.
Here's the deal. How much of the market, real estate market, is comprised of this type of property?
12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start.
And now, here's your host of Lickin' on Lending,
3, 2,
David Lickin.
Welcome to the program, everybody. It is Monday, Martin Luther King Day, January 15th, 2018. We're thrilled that you are tuned into the podcast or listening in on a downloaded basis. It amazes me how many people are listening live. Even though it's a holiday, we still got a good number of people listening and dialed in from all places across the country. So thank you. Appreciate you being the best part of the podcast, and you're sharing it with obviously hundreds and thousands of others. Our listenership continues to grow. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment to you is to bring you timely information on what's going on in the industry in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. And now, join us as we listen and learn all that's going on. Mitch Kiner's on the line, and we're thrilled to have Mitch back again. And of course, we're focusing on mergers and acquisitions. Now, Mitch has been instrumental as the chairman and managing partner of Wiener Brodsky Kiner in so many areas of the industry, so as well as just the overall trends, things that you need to keep in mind. And this is in advance of the upcoming M&A conference and MBA starting next Monday on Amelia Island. Looking forward to covering all of this with you. Mitch is going to be covering it, and we're thrilled to have him with us. Special thank you to our sponsors, Black Knight, leading provider of integrated software and data analytics solutions that facilitate and automate many of the business processes across home ownership lifecycle. Finastra, the third largest fintech company in the world, approximately 10,000 employees in 42 countries, serving 9,000 companies. Amazing. The Mortgage Collaborative, the power of the network. And we also have Velma, which is an effective electronic mortgage marketing platform where you can get a hold of your contacts, as well as we have new sponsors joining us constantly. You got to check out the website, but we're really excited now to be a part of the Lenders One Network. We have the upcoming winter conference that's coming up. Want to tell you all about that. I'll be speaking at the upcoming Independent Mortgage Bankers Conference at the Ritz-Carlton on Amelia Island. That's this next week. I speak on Tuesday on business process improvement. We've got a great panel, and they've had to enlarge the room that we're speaking in because so many people are interested in this topic at this time. So very excited to have the opportunity to speak there. Also want to point out that the MBA has their National Mortgage Servicing Conference at the Gaylord Texan in Grapevine, Texas. That's on February 6th through the 9th, as well as the Multifamily Housing Convention in the Marriott in San Diego. Great place to go this time of the year with all the sub-zero temperatures we have going on, February 11th through the 14th. I spoke last week at the American Mortgage Equity Consultants Annual Sales Meeting last week. Really good. That was on Friday. Had a great time up in Minneapolis. Woke up to 9 below and traveled across frozen tundra to get to their hotel and had a great event. So it was really, really good. So good to have you all with us. Let's get over to, did the MBA submit their mortgage minute to us? Wow, we didn't get it, I think we covered a lot of the event. Very pleased with our partnership with them. So let's go on and talk with Les Parker and hear what he has with Loan Logic and the macro update on the economic.
Dave, you are the real thing. Loan Logix appreciates the opportunity to present Market Logix Live.
I'd like to teach the world to sing and fly.
Fed likes to teach the world to grow in perfect harmony. They'd like to hold up buying bonds and shrink their balance sheet. Last week, the Bank of Japan reduced its QE purchases. On top of that, rumors circulated that the ECB will end its purchase program in 2018 rather than just taper. After 2 years of rising disparity, the G4 central banks move into perfect harmony. When more of the G4 physically reduce their purchases rather than talk about it, then don't be surprised if the timid bond bears become roaring bulls. These views are my own. Go to LoanLogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
And I'd like to hold it in my arms.
Love that old song. Appropriate for that topic. So let's get Joe Farr on the line. Joe, why don't you give us your perspective of what's going on this week? We got a day off, so it's a little quiet now. Okay. But
let's talk about the start to the year. It's been a rough start to the year, hasn't it?
Mortgage
rates have risen, MBS prices have fallen, it's been volatile. So, you know, it has been a rough start. Last week was certainly saw the same thing. We saw MBS prices fall about 10/32 or 31 basis points. One reason was strong demand for stocks. And the Dow rose about 500 points during the week to 25,800. And I just saw a look at the futures, and stocks futures are up another 100 and something points. So it is really on a tear. Data last week also contributed to the fall in MBS prices and the rise in rates. Mostly it was strong retail sales and higher than expected core CPI last week. Those were both released on Friday. Retail sales numbers actually matched for December, but November sales were revised higher. So, you know, with that revision higher and with still matching the expected growth in December, is really a pretty strong report. The more concerning of the two reports for mortgage rates came when core CPI for December rose more than expected. Not a lot more, but you know, any movement in that direction is a pretty critical thing. The annualized rate for CPI, core CPI, rose to 1.8%. Well, it's still below the Fed's 2% target, but it has moved a little bit in that direction. There was a report overnight on Tuesday that China may reduce its purchases of U.S. Treasury bonds, mostly Treasuries. But that really had a negative effect on the start of the day on Wednesday. Now, the reports were apparently false. In fact, on Thursday, the Chinese officials came out saying that the reports were false. But you know, it caused a sharp drop in prices Wednesday morning, and then they did recover most of the drop during the day. But you know, it kind of shows you never know where things can
where it's going to come from.
That can have impact mortgage rates. The data released during the first part of the week really had very little effect on mortgage rate. So really, it was all on Friday's retail sales and CPI. So again, not a great start to the year for mortgage rates. Now, stocks, you got to say the other thing about that. And then looking ahead, David, this week, there's not a lot on the calendar. A little bit of housing data comes out. The NAHB Housing Index comes out on Wednesday, and the housing starts on Thursday. We do have industrial production comes out on Wednesday. The preliminary look at consumer sentiment for January will come out on Friday. There are several Fed speakers. They're all on Wednesday this week. And then out there looming is the potential government shutdown. If things don't get taken care of, it's set to shut down after Friday.
Great, so that's my report, Dave. Yeah, it creates that uncertainty, which, you know, again, creates some volatility. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Joe. I look forward to your report each and every week, as do many of our listeners. So I really do appreciate it. Let's head over and hear from our sponsor, Velma, if you're looking for an effective way to get out and get your word out.
Are you using one of those expensive CRMs that your loan officers won't use? If so, then give my friends at Velma a call and let them help you create a customer journey that relies on the data and not on loan officer interaction. I encourage you to consider working with Velma to create a truly automated marketing experience for your organization. Velma makes marketing automation easy. Schedule a demo today at Velma.com, V-E-L-M-A.com.
The Mortgage Collaborative was founded by former chairman of the NBA, John Robbins and David Kittle, and leaders at the forefront of the diversity movement in the real estate industry, Jim Park and Gary Acosta. The Mortgage Collaborative is the nation's only independent cooperative. The collaborative provides its members the opportunity to meet and form meaningful relationships with top mortgage professionals and leaders in our industry. In a relationship-driven business such as ours, often who you know is as important as what you know. To learn more, go to mortgagecollaborative.com or call Rich Swarbinski at 440-552-0691. The power of the network.
So true. Power of the network. It makes sense that you become a part of something that connects you with the most important people in the industry that can make a difference in your business. With that, let's get over to Alice Alvey. Alice, good to have you here with us today.
Thanks, Dave. It's good to be here. Happy MLK Day. And MLK I'm so grateful Day. That this holiday is getting more recognition because it has quite a long history of trying to get employers to actually give people the day off. So it's actually fascinating to read the evolution of the Martin Luther King holiday and it being signed into law and then a lot of states not really honoring that, and you know, it just had to get another law, first law signed by Reagan, and then another law signed by Clinton, you know, really taking 10 years or more to evolve into being, you know, the holiday and recognition it deserves today. So I'm happy to be here. Just wanted to give everybody a quick update on legislation in general. On the mortgage side is not moving very much because obviously there's been a lot of attention paid to the Tax Reform Act and then now, of course, the budget crisis. So two things I do want to make sure everyone's aware of is the Mortgage Bankers Association did testify on January 10th regarding the VA churning, and this is an issue we're watching. Now, Ginnie Mae came out with their memorandum saying, all right, any loans starting April 1st, any VA loan, well, let me rephrase. The Ginnie Mae memo says government loans must have the six-month seasoning before it can refinance. Now, the memo references government loans in general, FHA, VA, and USDA, but FHA and USDA already had the rules in place. So the only real impact is to the VA interest rate reduction refinances, where, you know, obviously you all know it's the thinnest loan in mortgage banking. There's not a lot to verify on those products. So true. We now have a rule from Ginnie for the 6 months. Got to really start looking at your pipelines today because those loans could end up in, you know, by the time you start settling pools and then you've got to be able to deliver that by April 1st. Your applications coming in about now are potentially going to end up in those pools. So be careful of that. Certainly if you close one, there's the option for a custom pool. I'm not the secondary market expert, but from my understanding, that's a pretty pricey option. You may not be winning on that one. So it's unusual. It's not coming from VA, coming from Ginny, but hopefully does at least do one small thing to pay attention to this issue. We don't think it'll completely solve the problem because certainly lenders will be on the phone with borrowers on day 121 after or 181 after the time period expires. So just a heads up there that that's time. And then one other issue is really that we see from a lender standpoint is the servicing forbearance, the loans in forbearance coming out of the hurricane disasters that we had at the end of last year. So that time frame is now a lot of borrowers were thinking, I don't make my payments, and they just tack on to the end of the loan. Borrowers are not really well informed about what forbearance really means and, you know, how they have to solve for this. So I think it's something that servicers are really trying to address now and case by case and a lot of all hands on decks going on in servicing today. So I think, Dave, there's maybe a series coming up on servicing.
Yes, it is.
And it definitely highlights the need for more expertise in the default servicing and challenging servicing areas that we have right now. So that's my report for today, Dave.
For your report today. Thank you so much. Well, we've got a ad from Black Knight, our new sponsor, on this topic. So this may be timely to play that right now. So here's what we got from Black Knight. Glad to have them as sponsor.
Did you know that the impact from Hurricane Harvey, Irma, and Maria has caused historic damage to thousands of homeowners in the impacted areas? The results reported by Black Knight's data and analytics team state that there were 4.38 million mortgage properties within the Harvey and Irma FEMA declared disaster areas. an estimate of just over 400,000 mortgage properties in Puerto Rico as a whole and the entire territory has been declared. Altogether, these properties represent approximately $755 billion in unpaid principal balances. Identifying properties damaged by these devastating storms is cumbersome and time-consuming for servicers. So in order to help, Black Knight has introduced disaster tracking capabilities within its LoanSphere MSP servicing system. The new functionality actually sweeps servicing portfolios to quickly identify properties in FEMA-declared disaster areas. If you want to learn more, call 844-474-2537 and you can ask Black Knight or email askblacknight@bkfs.com.
That's good. That's a good report. That, I mean, it's so true. What they have, they're servicing, I think it's over 70% of the loans in America is being serviced on their system. It's really appropriate that you go to the expert who's got doing more to support loan servicing in America and Black Knight. Glad to have them a sponsor, new sponsor. Also glad to have Finastra. We're not going to be playing their ad as we normally would. I just want to talk about there's a lot of things going on there at Finastra that I think you need to be dialing and paying attention to. Get a hold of one of their salespeople. There has been some reorganization. There have been some people that have left. And there is a new vision. And it's important as you make decisions about what should be your automation solutions, it's important that you understand these changes. They're building something that is, I think, very exciting. And I would encourage you to check out their website, finastra.com, F-I-N-A-S-T-R-A.com. And get a hold of one of their salespeople. Again, thank you to Black Knight and Finastra for being a sponsor of our program. Alan Pollack, so good to hear your voice. What you got for us today, my friend?
Well, I wanted to let you know that the missile alert was false. Just in case you were
unbelievable.
You were hunkered down in your bathtub. Yeah, very interesting. Saturday morning, a message went out that said that a ballistic missile inbound to Hawaii and urged people to seek shelter was sent out. It was sent out due to a human error. The alert went out initially at 8 o'clock in the morning, about 7 minutes after 8, and it wasn't until about 8:45 that the state sent a second alert announcing it was a false alarm. So that's quite a bit of time there that people were frantically finding shelter, right? We were talking earlier, there's some stories of people hiding their children in drain gutters, in sewers, and then people, you know, in their bathtubs with mattresses on top. What's kind of funny is once people came out of hiding, of course, they were pretty upset. There was no imminent nuclear missile attack. It was a false alarm. And there was a lot of fear and panic that did transfer into rage. The blunder, as it's being called, occurred twice. See, there's a test that happens two times a day. And the staffers then switch shifts. And so in this case, the staffer accidentally selected a live alert instead of a test alert. And when the live alert went out, there was no way to automatically cancel or recall the message. It's performed on a PC interface, computer system, just like our industry works. The person probably had a mouse to do a drop down of a preset message that they selected. And preloaded messages, as the state has come out, the emergency management, Hawaii Emergency Management has said, those pre-recorded messages or preloaded messages are critically needed because in the event of a real emergency, there's not time to really type those messages up. So anyways, part of the problem is it was too easy for anyone to make such a big mistake. And so a spokesman for the Hawaii Emergency Management Office has said, we had to make sure that we're not looking for retribution, but we should be fixing the problem in the system. And since that time, the software company has put ability to make the cancel button clickable. So what we're talking about here is its software and its product design and the expectations of how the application will work. And it sounds like the system which they use is a critical component of their day-to-day business operation. It's critically involved in setting user or end user expectations, and it may not have been thoroughly thought out as far as how to be used and who the end user is going to be. In other words, it sounds, David, like the product was built in a vacuum, and there were many competing priorities, just like there are today.
Yep.
Sounds so familiar,
doesn't it? It really does.
That's right. And so just think, we use a new digital mortgage platform, something focused on the front-end point of sale, the borrower experience, and it turns out that we provide a pre-approval letter to the borrower because the wrong button was clicked. What could have prevented this? Better thought process around the product expectation and controls. So food for thought, as we build our products, as we implement vendors, as we orchestrate our best practice services and technology, let's take a minute and try to step out of the box and make sure that we've thought through the experience for each of the consumers or each of the different users of the system. Plan, design, develop, and deploy. And so, David, that's a topic that we're going to be focusing on the new radio program, product management, and how to really connect the dots between what your practice, your lending institution and practice needs as far as what you want to deliver, who the user, the consumer is, and how do you connect the dots? How do you stay aligned with your strategy? How do you prioritize? And ultimately, how do you create, what are those test stories? How do you test what it is you're going to build and what the expectation of the end user is? So we're going to be focusing on a lot of those different topics. Exciting stuff. I'm so sorry to hear what happened to all of our friends out in Hawaii. And hopefully that kind of issue doesn't happen again.
Hopefully not. But you point out, you make some great points in your segment here. And again, we're going to be talking about these kind of things in our new podcast launching yet this month. January 8, 2018, as promised. We're looking forward to it. Alan, I'm really looking forward to co-hosting this one with you, techstackradio.com. We're going to be launching the website and the app. There's a lot of cool things that are going to be going with it, and so I am looking
forward to that.
Super exciting.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining in. Let's have you also participate in the discussion with our good friend Mitch Kiter and about this, and I want you to be thinking about some mergers as it relates to the tech side of the business. That, you know, and give some comment on that. Look forward to that. Thank you so much, Alan. Great to have you back here. We're going to be running over to ArchMI, hearing from our good friend Jim Jemp. I'll be speaking at their national sales meeting this week, coming week, in Phoenix. Really looking forward to it. But let's talk to Jim for a minute. Jim?
Thanks, David. Let me tell your audience a little bit about ArchMI RateStar. RateStar is the most sophisticated pricing solution for mortgage insurance quotes ever built. RateStar has an advanced revolutionary design. It's simple to use, it's easy to access, and it's fully mobile. You can access it anywhere, anytime. RateStar provides a more sophisticated and dynamic pricing solution, far superior than conventional rate sheets. It's available on loan origination systems through many pricing engines, and it rewards your origination of high-quality loans, again, with our most competitive rates. Of course, RateStar is backed by ArchMI's people power, providing superior support and service whenever you might need it. For more information about RateStar, please go to archmi.com or archmicu.com for credit unions. Thanks, David.
You bet. Thank you so much, Jim, for being here with us. Thanks again for your sponsorship. Looking forward to speaking to the whole sales organization this coming week in Phoenix. Let's get over to Andy Schell. Andy Schell, the profit doctor. He's got more letters behind his name, CPA, CFF, CMB, soon to have PhDs working on it here, at least. I'm impressed. I love it. What do you got for us, sir, our listening audience here? It's all over the country today dialed in.
Oh, well, I'm not surprised, given that we've got a rock star on the show today with Mitch Kiter.
That's true.
I mean, everybody wants to hear what Mitch says. He's like the CFPB whisperer.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he'll have a comment about that. So, Dave, a couple things first. It's the 15th of January. Accounting is still head down, butt up, plowing ahead as fast as they can. W-2s, 1099s, 1098s, home to reporting, financial reporting, year-end audit, tax returns. All this stuff has to be done, and there's deadlines for all of it. So go out to the store sometime and buy a pineapple and put a red bow on it and bring it into the accounting department and say, thank you for working so hard, or get them a box of donuts. Do something to say you appreciate all the hard work accounting is doing in this crunch time of the year. Now, Dave, you know how much I enjoy M&A. You and I have been doing M&A for a very long time. And we've known Mitch for a long time, as long as Chuck Klein, my partner. And so very excited to have Mitch on the show today. And, you know, when Chuck's working on an M&A deal, his one-stop shop is WBK, because Mitch's team are some of the best lawyers in the country to document the M&A transactions that Chuck works on. And so, you know, it's kind of like when you're dealing with this M&A stuff, it's like, so you have an eHarmony function, so Chuck puts people together, and then you have to have a private investigator. So you got to, like, have two pieces just from big picture perspective. Someone to put it together and then someone to say, like, if you go on your eHarmony date, you need someone to to make sure what they told you is true. Is it really what they said they were going to be? Because everybody lies. So you need somebody to dig in and make sure the company records are validated, and that this is called due diligence. And it's important to get a really good due diligence team. Our firm does it. We're one of the ones that do that. And
you do a good job,
Dave. Experts, well, thanks, Dave. Well, it's because we're experts, well, I mean, like you, it's because we're experts in the most advanced topics in mortgage banking, you know, because, like, I teach accounting, hedging, servicing. So it's hard for them to sneak one past us, and also because we work deeply in operational line repurchase management, you know, the technology SLA piece of it and capital structure. It's, you know, it's unlikely they're going to get something past us. So that's a really important part of M&A that I'm sure Mitch is going to get into, is that are they really who they say they are? And the part that Mitch's team does is that definitive agreement kind of has to spell it all out, and that is so complicated, so extensive, and emotions are heated. And that's where Chuck Klein steps in and does such a great job in helping people identify the philosophical alignment, keep the deal together, and help people focus on really the market differentiation to drive competitive advantage that's going to result from this combined value stream to support long-term success. So people have got to really make sure it makes sense, and make sure it makes sense philosophically as well, and then you got to make sure it's all documented. What people say in the room, it doesn't count. What's written in the definitive agreement is what does count, and Mitch's team does world class at putting together the legal stuff. So I'm delighted to have Mitch on the show today, and looking forward to all of his pearls of wisdom.
Yeah, especially with the latest announcement. Sounds like that didn't take him by surprise at all. He says, yeah, I've been working on it for months. So, yeah, he's in a lot of these deals. Excellent, Andy. And when you're looking at doing, you do a lot of valuation work, too. And a lot of people are thinking about selling, you know, what's my company worth? I think if you could just talk very briefly about that so we allow maximum time for Mitch. But, you know, what goes into an evaluation analysis?
Well, sure.
A lot of people, you know, it's remember seeing that picture of the appraiser that we have on the walls, you know, what the consumer thinks their house worth, what the tax assessor thinks it's worth,
right.
And you know, all these different photos of different sizes. So, you know, what goes into it real quickly?
Sure. And what's funny about this, Dave, is that so on the AICPA side of things, so when I do evaluation under the pronouncements from the AICPA around business valuation, that's part of my CFF designation, Certified
right.
Financial Forensics, but that's part of the valuation group, is that we have to do discounts. So we discount, we look at cash flows and then discount them based on marketability, based on control. There's a whole bunch of them, long list of discounts. But what's funny about it, so Chuck will sit down with his napkin at the restaurant talking to people, and they'll start talking about value, and it's amazing how close it gets. So it kind of comes down to cash flows. It's always about cash flows less or plus balance sheet values. And this is where people get really concerned, because the balance sheet, especially with derivative assets, can be substantially overstated. If they've got an under-application of the cost to complete applied to the derivative asset and they show that on their books as a basis for valuation, it's going to get cut by 3/4. So it's going to get cut by a lot. So it's really cash flows. It's cash flows are the key driver that drives value.
Yeah, good job. Well, we have to have you on just talk about that whole thing that goes into that. We have to make a special program out of that. Thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Dave.
And one of your favorite topics is KPIs, key performance indicators. So let's head over to John Maynell of Motivity Solutions, now part of the Black Knight family, and hear what John has to say as to the KPI of the week. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, thanks very much, David. Always good to be here. And this week's key performance indicator is application to funded cycle time. Since the arrival of TRID, cycle time measurements have obviously come to the forefront, everything from looking at the entire application to funded cycle down to sub-cycles or cycle time between milestones. Everyone wants to compress cycle time, and the beauty of this type of strategic KPI is that it can be tied to operational KPIs that track the tasks or processes within the cycle that contribute to how long or short that cycle is. So operational KPIs can be thought of as the cause, and strategic KPIs are the effect. And balancing and monitoring these key measurements really can drive performance, and this demonstrates again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, David, I will turn it back to you. Thanks very much again.
So true. What gets measured gets results. No better way to measure it than with Black Knight Financial Services Motivity Solutions product, Movation. Good to have you with us, everybody. Mitch Kiner's on the line, and we're thrilled to have Mitch back again. And of course, we're focusing on mergers and acquisitions. Now, Mitch has been instrumental as the chairman and managing partner of Wiener Brodsky Kiner in so many areas of the industry. So if we're specializing on anything, we could have Mitch on as a guest. He covers literally every aspect of it. So we're going to try to focus on some mergers and acquisitions, although we're going to get tempted to steer off into a couple other areas. But Mitch, I just want to welcome you back. It's been a little while since we've had you on, and we're going to fix that in 2018. We're going to have you back a lot more. Good to have you with us, sir.
Thanks, David. It's great to be here with you.
Well, let's stay focused on the M&A area. Talk from your perspective about the trends. The latest announcement that Guild is buying Cornerstone, and we need to put a big caveat out there. This is not the Cornerstone in Houston. This is the Cornerstone in St. Louis. But this didn't take you by surprise when we raised it just before we talked. Sounds like you were involved in some way, shape, or form or working on it. So what are the trends and any insights you can give to what's going on and what we can anticipate in this important area in 2018?
So, David, I would start by saying, generally speaking, M&A activity has increased, I think, rather significantly in the past year, and I think it's going to increase even more so in 2018. I mean, companies are looking for economies of scale, and certainly that's something that comes into play. And when you look at a deal like Guild purchasing Cornerstone, a St. Louis company, and, some companies that are looking to acquire are looking into getting to markets that they hadn't been in before. So in that particular example, Cornerstone opens up a really nice Midwest market for Guild. So I think that's going to be a deal that works out for all parties. Some parties are looking for better technology, and they sell for that particular reason. Technology has become all the more important and will become even more and more important in the origination part of the business as well as the servicing part of the business. And, smaller companies and even mid-sized companies can't necessarily keep up with the best of the technology that is out there or available for them. And some companies, in all honesty, are looking for better relationships in the secondary market. Margins are down. Margins are tight. Yeah, they're not what they were about a year and a half ago or so. And so the cost of originating is more expensive. Cost of servicing, is somewhat expensive too. Those margins have never been all that good. And the truth is, another trend that you see out there is a lot of aging baby boomers, such as myself, are, trying to cash out. It's time for them to get out of the business. They've had a great ride. They've been doing it for 30, 35, 40 years or so, and it's time to cash out. So those are the trends, and they're going to continue, I think, even more so in 2018.
That's encouraging to hear you say, and encouraging, but what are some of the challenges this brings? If you look at this, are we going to have fewer companies? Are you seeing crop of new companies coming in? We're seeing evidence of that. There seems to be a whole new, I use the analogy of a forest fire. When you have a forest fire going through, and I don't like that, it's destructive, but consolidation usually is positive when done right, get the right people involved in. But when you do have that, it opens up sunlight, brings in opportunities for smaller startups. Are you seeing those trends as well, Mitch?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the overall trend that you're seeing today is one of consolidation. And as I said, people getting out of the business and companies consolidating into larger business. But trends have a way of changing over time, and you could already see the seeds of that happening as well. There have been a number of examples of larger players that have been getting out of the mortgage industry. Capital One decided it was going to get out of the origination business. Others are getting out of that business as well. And so you've got managers, employees of those banks and larger that were with larger companies, and they're going to go work somewhere, quite frankly. And you're seeing, little spin-offs, for lack of a better term, and you're seeing other entities that are rising. And the private equity market seems to have a real interest in mortgage banking today, and so you're seeing them not only acquire but start some companies as well.
It's an encouraging trend. So I think, and they're really well capitalized. Obviously, private equity firms are getting involved. They're well capitalized, but we're seeing more, even some of these startups that are independently owned. That's probably the one new trend I see in the other side of that is the new growth that's happening within industry. It's a very well capitalized number of new startups. I want to run the mic over. Let's first go to Joe and then Alice and Andy. And Alan, let's get some kind of questions regarding the trends. And then I want to go into eventually the mistakes here in a few minutes. So let's start off with Joe.
Yeah, so we were just talking about, you know, the big institutions buying what are likely family kind of owned businesses. And I was wondering, Mitch, in that environment, what does an owner-operator who wants to sell but continue to you know, manage his part of the operations, what does he do in a transaction where he's being acquired by one of the big institutions, one of the, you know, the Wall Street firms? Is there still an opportunity for that person?
You know, in some instances, there's an opportunity for that person. And, you know, you raise a good point through that particular question. Before anyone makes a determination to sell, they need to sit down and think through what it is they ultimately want to do. Do they want to stay in the company? Do they want to maintain an ownership interest in the company? Do they only want to sell a piece of the company itself? And then they have to look for and structure a deal along those particular lines. For the most part, you know, if you're going to sell to a large Wall Street company, as you put it, you know, there'll be an earnout because earnouts are still very important to the transactions that are taking place today, which will keep those individuals at the company for a certain point of time. But for the most part, you know, when the earnout period is done, many, many of those former owners end up leaving the company itself. So it's important to think through what your horizon is and what you want to see happen in the future, because there are different players that will acquire your business, that will offer you different things along those particular lines.
Alice, let's get you involved. Questions?
Oh, great. Hi, Mitch. So
hey,
I have a question about value, right? And what is value in buying today? So traditionally in years past, it was the value of the servicing or the value of the book of business, the value of the originators. It seems to me today that process also plays value in technology. Can you talk a little bit about what the latest trend is and what people really want to pay for today? Since there's a
great
lot of
question.
Non-servicers out there who are looking to build their ability to be purchased.
So that's a great question, Alice. I mean, different companies have different values for different reasons. That's exactly right. So technology is a prime example of it. You know, a company that is technologically advanced, a company that can offer something by way of streamlined and more efficient processing that lower the costs of production, obviously has a much greater value than a company that otherwise can't do something along those particular lines. I mean, there are all kinds of different things that people will place value on today. I actually think that a lot of what's going on in the marketplace and a lot of what's going to go on in the marketplace still has to do with market share. And it's a matter of where you are, where you're located, how can I pick up more market share along those particular lines. That still plays a pretty big role in value from my perspective. And I think that's probably something that, you know, if you look at the Guild transaction, that's probably something that Guild thought about as well when they thought, you know, it's time for us to really enter into the Midwest market. So there are a number of different factors that come into play, and there isn't just one thing that you can put your finger on that says, okay, this is the golden key. This is what takes it there. Different companies have different needs and are looking along those particular lines.
Very good point. Really good point. I think, you know, when you come to geographic locations and getting into markets you're not, I think this most recent announcement that came out on Friday about Guild acquiring Cornerstone up in St. Louis is a great example of that. Andy, let's get you in on this, on the trend part of this discussion.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Mitch. Just as a side note, tag along to what Mitch just said, Dave, you mentioned I'm in the doctoral program. So one of the things in business that we look for is a market differentiation that drives a competitive advantage. That's kind of the theory behind some of this stuff. And so you can boil it down to some of those key terms that ultimately figure out why people do what they do. But they're kind of usually driving to, how do I stay competitive? How do I sell more or spend less doing the same thing? So Mitch, when you're dealing with someone who's trying to sell and they're trying to figure out, you know, what they're really worth, and people want to get paid up front, and lot of times there's an earn-out, but people want as much up front as they can. What are you seeing trend-wise in terms of the payout? Are people actually able to get funds up front, or is it almost always heading toward the earn-out process?
Well, a lot of it still heads toward the earn-out process. And obviously, you know, if you're selling your company, you need to be very careful about that, because an earn-out is by no means guaranteed. And in this industry, as well as the general marketplace itself, you don't necessarily know what's going to happen next year and the year after that. So, you know, I've seen transactions, and I'm sure you have as well, Andy, where there was an expectation for a specific earnout, and that expectation simply wasn't met because of factors that were not within the control of either of the parties. But the industry still relies heavily upon earnouts. So, you know, if I'm representing a seller, I want to get as much as I can up front. And anything that's coming by way of an earnout, I want to keep on a very short leash, a very short period. I don't like going beyond 3 years, quite frankly, from an earnout perspective. And as I said, I try my best to get that money right up front. If I'm a buyer, obviously, it's a little different.
That's so true. I mean, probably one of the best examples of that was when we sold our last mortgage company. We sold it to a Wall Street firm. We sold it in 95. We had a five-year earnout. Guess what happened? Long-term capital blew up the liquidity in the markets. Our company, which is had a market cap of $1.3 billion that acquired us with only 20% of the shares traded, blew up and went away. I mean, they filed bankruptcy along with many other big institutions. You remember that day. It was just an ugly day. So these are good examples of factors. We had a good attorney back then, but I really wish we had you in there. We would have shortened that buyout, and we would have done all right, much better.
I was going to actually mention your fiasco that you experienced, but ultimately, earnouts are, you're a creditor. You are relying on someone else to pay you something in the future. So
that's
it sounds
good.
Like that you're the master of your destiny, but rarely is that the case.
Yeah, and there's these black swan events. And Mitch, when we had you on this program talking about this topic another time, you clearly said, I do not recommend going out more than 3 years. In fact, you try to get it done sooner. So it really comes down to having wisdom, listeners, and that people that have been through this journey, through this rodeo, and it does seem like a rodeo at times, and this is just an absolute push to get a hold of Mitch Kiatter. He knows what he's doing. He goes, if you're a seller, especially if you're a seller, he knows and he'll keep your interests, best interests in sight. Alan, let's get into the aspect of the, looking at the clock here and want to move it through technology. We're seeing a lot of technology opportunities for mergers. You consulted several right now yourself. So any questions for Mitch in that vein?
Well, yeah, I mean, I could spend all day talking to Mitch. I've been involved in some myself. But you know what's kind of funny, Mitch, is that technology vendors in the mortgage industry, everything is the same but different, right? You have the different assets, but they all mean the same thing. And you do look for, you know, as you were saying, Andy, the differentiator and what are you doing different or how far ahead are you than your competition? But ultimately, I think that there is a lot of consolidation that will occur, is my opinion, because there's a lot of people that ran forward to hit the market and trying to find what they thought digital mortgages. And so there's going to be a lot of earnouts, right? There's going to be a lot of paper acquisition. But I also think there's a lot of confusion. I think that even starting a new company, a lot of people think that, hey, we'll just distribute X amount of shares. Those shares, you know, then we'll go and we'll raise some capital. And I don't think they understand the true process of pre-money valuation, post-money, anything in that area, thinking about technology vendors in our industry you want to chat about?
I missed the last part. You broke up a little bit over there.
Yeah, you did break up.
Say question one more time.
Just the dilution of their value, thinking that, you know, they're worth more than what they actually are, and at what point in their
growth about technology.
Have they...
Yeah.
That's right. On the technology side of our industry.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, first of all, on the technology side of your industry, you've seen a fair amount of consolidation there alone, quite frankly. I mean, just look at everything that Ellie Mae has done and look at the Ellie Mae acquisitions. One of your sponsors here is Finastra, and Finastra had a fantastic deal when they bought up D&H. So there are a lot of different examples of you know, the consolidation in that part of the industry, and that's going to continue as well. Okay, as you put the technology piece into the mortgage banking consolidation that's taking place, It's interesting because you really have to find the company that either, if you're a buyer, you have to find the company that could fit within your system and in your structure and otherwise benefit from that. And if you're a seller as well, you've got to be compatible along those particular lines. But in terms of, you know, the valuations that take place and the value of technology that it ultimately brings, the reality is you're typically not selling your company because you're bringing value to it by way of technology. You're typically looking for the acquirer that's going to make your life easier, that's going to have the proper technology that you're going to be able to fit within so that you can make more money and do it in a more efficient manner.
Good point.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there is some unique opportunity where lenders are looking to be different by offering different channels of business based on the technology they can acquire. So there's some consolidation from lenders acquiring technology solutions. You actually are hearing about large capital investments being made in certain technology vendors because they want to steer and have directional advice on their roadmap. So yeah, it's an interesting time for our industry and mergers and acquisitions, I would say. 2018 is going to be quite exciting.
It's going to be a lot of activity. And one of the mistakes, I want to move over to the mistakes to avoid. We've already talked about having too long of an earnout. That's one mistake I tripped over, and we had in our situation had a huge financial consequence. But it's also interesting that we got a huge multiple because of the technology we had in there. So they were acquiring us both for our business model, which was consumer direct early on, and because of the technology, proprietary technology that we built in the system. And so our mistake was we went too long. So we've already talked about that one. What are some other mistakes that you advise your clients to be careful of or be aware of as they enter into what is considered probably one of the more exciting events? Everyone's hopeful. It's like a wedding. Everyone's looking forward to it. And then there's the day after, Mitch. And what are the things that you would advise them to do so there's a happy day after?
So I love that analogy to it being a wedding because, you know, let's start off with the most basic and fundamental mistake that's made. And that is people look at it solely as a business transaction, forgetting to think about how the two different cultures are going to mesh together. And it's a huge mistake to either acquire a company or to be acquired until you've examined and you know and understand the people on both sides of the transaction. Very, very important. Same thing with a wedding, quite frankly. That marriage isn't going to last if, in fact, your values are different and you come at it from such a different perspective. And that's the same thing that deals with mortgage banking entities itself. So first and foremost, make sure it's a good fit, not just from a pure business perspective, but from a cultural perspective as well. I mean, is this the kind of company that you think you'll do well in? And do they in fact operate in a way that reflects the same and similar values? Do they treat their employees in a similar fashion? Because you're going to want to hold on to your employees, especially when you have that earnout that you're otherwise waiting for. So that's critical. Okay, I would put that number one on the list. Number two on my list, obviously, would be what we already talked about, and that is relying upon these earnouts. You know, as we said, those are just contingent. There's no guarantee, and you really don't know what's going to happen. And so we've seen many mistakes along those particular lines. People also go into these transactions. You know, we spent a fair amount of time already talking about value and price. And a lot of sellers walk into these transactions without a realistic idea of what value they're bringing to it. And that's something that they have to figure out in advance, because otherwise they're going to be very disappointed at the end of the day. And more, I'm seeing others jump into transactions because they think that it's going to help them in the secondary market, or it's going to give them greater access to warehouse financing, and you know, all of those things are obviously, you know, essential tools to growing your business. But they also provide great opportunities for a buyer to hold the company that they purchased to a certain extent hostage in the future as well. Secondary market and warehouse relationships can be built up over time. They're important, and it's great if someone brings that to the transaction, it can help. But sometimes I see a little bit too much of an emphasis that's otherwise being placed on that. I will tell you the number one mistake, the most frustrating thing that I see as an attorney is when the transactions come to me and there has already been an executed letter of intent. Now, this is solely a legal matter, but once that letter of intent is executed,
so
even though it's non-binding for the most part, other than, you know, some provisions that deal with confidentiality, the reality is once that letter of intent is executed, the expectations are set, and they're there. And someone's going to be disappointed, you know, if in fact they think, you know what, it's just a letter of intent, and I'm going to come back and say, no, that didn't really work for me, and I'll do something else along those lines. And I get frustrated, in all honesty, when clients come up and they say, well, I have an executed letter of intent. And as I look it over and I say, well, did you think about these various issues? And they say, no, well, we didn't. And that just makes, you know, everyone's job much more difficult. And it takes some of those expectations and pushes it down at a point in time when you don't want to see that happen, when you want to see the two entities really working together, and you want to see, you know, the anticipation, you know, in their eyes and in their minds as to what can be as a result of those companies coming together.
That's a really good point
that I see.
Yeah, you know, and which really goes to get counsel early on, even before you even get to the point where you're engaging in with somebody. These are that is just so important. We've watched, Mitch, you know, I've talked about this in the past. We've watched people enter into an LOI, and at that point, expectations are set. And anything that you change at that creates suspicion, doubt, concern, and it begins to undermine and tear at the fabric of what you're trying to hopefully have. So that is really good. Alice, when it comes to compliance, any questions for Mitch on the compliance area, regulatory environment, as we're looking at M&A?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Mitch, one of the things we see, obviously, is people perform their due diligence. And sometimes it seems to me in some of the deals I've been involved in, they take that rather lightly. You know, if there's violations, they think, oh, well, I've got systems in place. I can overcome that. There seems to be a lot of I can overcome operational issues. And then so I'd love your thoughts on that, on whether you've seen deals really go wrong because they couldn't overcome what they thought would be solvable operational issues. And then just my second question while I've got you is, have you ever really seen a deal with zero employee fallout, to your point earlier about culture? It seems there's that in the math, you've got to factor in there's going to be some fallout. So those are my two questions.
Yeah, so as to your latter question, no, I've never seen a deal with zero employee fallout. And yet so many of these deals depend on you maintaining a certain amount of employees through the closing. And as I said, your ability to earn some of your purchase price through the earnout is important to maintaining those employees as well. So that's something that everyone, you know, always needs to think about. Now, in terms of operational issues and things of that sort, yes. I mean, due diligence is absolutely critical, absolutely critical. And more I see the result of due diligence reports being taken really lightly. Part of that is, you know, we have a new administration and people think, well, enforcement is, you know, is going to be eased off on and, you know, that's not going to be an issue, or we can deal with these particular problems. But, it raises issues. We have seen instances where, you know, due diligence will point out a fundamental operational issue, okay? And what you need to do is address it and make a determination as to how you're going to address that operational issue on a go-forward basis rather than just make the assumption that, hey, this is kind of meaningless over here. It's going to be a new entity and we'll be able to walk away from it. You know, I've seen and I've done deals, quite frankly. I've done deals where I've sold companies that were subject to CFPB examinations and CFPB examination reports. And the reality is you can't share those reports or the results of the examinations without CFPB's prior approval. Now, when I buy a company, I get that approval from the CFPB. I jump through those hoops and I tell my client, you need to get this. But I got to tell you something, I've probably done a half a dozen deals in the last year or so, a little more than a year, you know, where my client had outstanding examinations and in some instances outstanding, you know, par letters and things of that sort, where people just said, okay, well, if I can't get it, I'm not going to go to the CFPB and ask for it. So things of that sort are very important. because, you know, if there are enforcement actions that are being taken, not just public enforcement actions, but even private enforcement actions through MOUs and things along those particular lines, it's going to carry over. It's going to carry over to the operation that moved over. And you can't take that lightly. And yet,
yes,
I see that all the time.
And it's those oversights that just create so much, I don't know, friction in the process, noise in the process, which should otherwise be, you know, if it's well planned in advance, it can go smoothly. I'm looking at the time. Joe, Andy, I'd love to get more questions in, but I want to respect everyone's time here that's listening in and Mitch's time. Mitch, how can people get a hold of you to start the dialogue? If they're, you know, and how do you charge for that? Is this something where you're so good at? And I want to highlight that. I'm asking the question because I know how good you are at giving a lot of information before you're engaged in that. And you're a wonderful resource. So, listeners, I encourage you, if you're considering selling a company, get a hold of Mitch in advance. So, how do you approach this, Mitch? How do you like to, when do you like to get involved? I think the hint is sooner than later. How do we go about it?
Well, first of all, I like to get involved early on. If you're thinking about either buying a company, thinking about selling a company, I like to be there from the very beginning because the advice that I give you really needs to be advice that's given in the beginning and will help you structure your deal properly, think about the issues, many of the issues that we talked about today. You asked how I bill. I mean, I'm a lawyer. For the most part, we bill on an hourly basis. Sometimes for some clients, we'll do some things on a fixed fee basis. But in terms of, you know, the fact that I provide a lot of information to the industry, I love giving back to this industry. You know that. I've represented this industry for a period of 36 years now. And so I'm happy to, you know, get on the phone with you guys, talk on your show. I'm delighted that you invited me to do it and, you know, go out there and give speeches and otherwise help out. If you want to get a hold of me, you do it either by email, you do it by telephone. My email, you know, is kiter@thewbkfirm.com, and my direct dial is 202-557-3511. And I'm happy to talk to anyone that has any questions along those lines. What I typically do, quite frankly, is someone calls me up, ask me your questions. We'll see if we're a good fit first before I'll take on a matter. And you should see that with any lawyer that you talk with as well. Don't just call someone up and have them say, all right, so give me a retainer right now and then I'll talk to you. Because you're never going to determine whether or not you're hiring the right person either.
That's so true. And Mitch, you have been such an advocate. And I want to tell our listeners, I have personally witnessed you giving inordinate amount of time to, I mean, just a very generous amount of time and a lot of wisdom before you ever went to an engagement letter and a retainer. You should get paid for your time. You're a professional and you do. But I tell you, one of the reasons I'm such an advocate of you is the time you give in advance of engagement to make sure it's the right fit for you and for them. I think that's just good business, and you do it so well. I want to say thank you for taking time to join us on this Martin Luther King Day and this holiday, and I really appreciate it. So repeat the email address and the phone number one more time, Mitch.
So the email is kiter@thewbkfirm.com, and the phone number, 202-557-3511.
Appreciate you joining us today, Mitch, and all of our listening audience. And then a special thank you goes to Alice, Andy, Joe, and everybody who participates and is here and makes this program possible, especially our sponsors. Have a great week, everybody. Happy Martin Luther King Day, and look forward to having you back here next week. David Kittle will be our guest. We're going to continue to talk about the trends, what he sees going on within the industry, a leader in the industry on the M&A topic. So we'll be continuing the M&A discussion with David Kittle and some other trends. Mitch, we've got to get you back on here. We can't let it be this long again. We'll look forward to getting you back on another one of the important topics that is out there in the industry. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.